Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 353. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have back on the show someone that I got to see just a couple weeks ago on the beautiful West Coast in Long Beach, California. But it's great to also meet up on Skype. That is Robert Dos Remedios. Dos, how you doing?
Hey, Kevin. Good, man. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. And thank you so much for getting up. You're someone that gets up really early. So
you
I
know,
appreciate that.
I used to be that guy, but not so much anymore. But I'm, you know, this is normal time, I guess. I'm kind of getting my stuff together and getting going. So,
well, I think there's this one subset of the population. You know, I'm sure there's people listening to this right now that are the personal trainers that have that 5 a.m. client that need to be up at 4 a.m. Which, awesome. If you can do that, and or if you have to do that, you're a badass.
Just don't text me when you get up at 4 a.m.
Right.
Send me something funny because my deal vibrates and it still wakes me up. You know, so
that's
so
the thing.
Those people, knock it off.
Yeah, you gotta like. There needs to be like another notch in that new iPhone 7 where you can get like not vibrate, but just shut the hell up.
Like exactly. Well, the worst is the East Coast buddy that gets up at 4. Now I'm getting my 1 o'clock notifications.
Well, I've been doing, and it kind of goes both ways because Brendan Rurick, who is obviously coach at NBSC, is out on the West Coast now, and it goes both ways because sometimes he'll just like text me at like 1 a.m. and I'll be like, dude, it's 1, man.
I've done that a million times where I go to send somebody a message or email thinking they're going to respond. I'm like, oh, wait a second. They're already asleep. You know, not even thinking about it, that it's 8 o'clock my time and who's asleep at 8 o'clock. Well, most people are in bed by, 10, 11 o'clock. So
yeah, it is a scenario where I do it and it's like you don't realize it till you hit send, and it's right when you hit send, it's like with the email thing too. It's like, oh man, I shouldn't have replied all on that one. Whoops. That's always fun. But we got a lot of great stuff to talk about, and I mentioned the Perform Better Summit, and one of the great things that you do every year is the pub crawl, and I like to bring focus to that just because like whenever I do anything charitable, it's for sick kids or it's for animals, like for dogs or for supporting the no kill shelters in the area, the Humane Society, things like that. So I'd love if you could kind of just do a recap. How did the event go? What were you able to raise and what were you supporting?
We started this. This was our sixth one this year. The first year we actually did Portland, which was kind of cool. And then we just said, it's just going to be really easy to have kind of a captive audience and do it in conjunction with the Long Beach Summit. The other alternative, I keep wanting to do like a Boston one because it would be the ultimate pub crawl scenario. But we're keeping it here for now. What I've been doing is kind of picking different shelters to donate to, kind of looking like, need base, who's getting the big funding, who's got the big donors versus, like we're out here at the Castaic shelter, which is right down the road from us where we've gotten our rescues from. And they do a great job with it with very, very limited resources. So for 4 of the past years, we've been giving to them. And then this year I said, we're in Long Beach, we're in the heart of Long Beach. So I'm going to try to really dial something in there. And there's an organization called the Friends of Long Beach Animals. And they basically, they're not a shelter. They help with the adoption process and everything, but they handle most of the spaying and neutering. And, that stuff adds up. It ends up being $30-something, $40-something per animal. Mm-hmm. And we raised about $7,200 or maybe $72 and some change, I believe.
Awesome.
And, that's hundreds and hundreds of those, and they just built a little facility right on their, portable set up there for, that they can actually do them behind their facility and get the vets in there and doing that, the process. So it's, and they had told me that amount of money that I donated could basically run that whole deal for a month, which is huge, and they're out there trying to get donors and trying to get people to give, annually and stuff like that. But every little bit obviously helps. And, our whole thing is, I do a Christmas workout out here in Santa Clarita Valley, and we do that for the Boys and Girls Club and some of the food pantries that are out here. So, we try to spread it around just kind of like you're doing for those that really can't do for themselves. So,
right.
And it's easy, when people like us get in and we know so many people and so many charitable people and caring people that, you had donated to it. We wish you would have saw you on the crawl. We've had great sponsorship every year because people just want to help. They just want to be part of this kind of cool thing. And I think we've made it a pretty cool event. And, you know, we try to pick a funky colored shirt so everybody sees us kind of crawling around the city and around the convention center. And it's a kind of a, you know, we get a lot of donations on the walk. You know, people give us money along the walk to hand over. So it was great. You know, we're going to continue it. And every year, you know, we've I think the first year we brought in like $2,000. And every year it's kind of gone up almost by $1,000. So, you know, we'll, you know, pretty soon we'll be hitting that 10,000 mark, which will be pretty cool.
Outstanding. And, you know, I don't have to echo it too much, but it's just a great thing to support. You know, I'm lucky enough to have a rescue dog, and, you know, he's a guy that I got through Labs for Rescue. He came up from Texas, and, you know, if you can do something to support these animals, like he was found with a clothesline wrapped around his neck, and like he chewed through it and got away. But you know, luckily there was some foster family that snatched him up and they flew him up here via US Airlines. I think he got some nice care package through on the trip up, and he's been a great dog ever since. He's been a great companion for these last, God, almost 5 years now, which is kind of unbelievable. But yeah, just a great cause. Is there, you know, people are like, if they missed out on supporting this, is there any way that they can still support the pub crawl for this year? Or if they can't, like, is there an organization that you'd say like, yeah, hey, if you have some extra bucks, you know, maybe this is an organization you should check out?
Yeah, I mean, we spread it around. Like I said, that's a great organization. I'm probably going to do it again next year for that same group, because they're just so – and they showed up to the crawl and they hung out with us, and they were so appreciative, you know, and you know, laid out all the stuff that they're doing and all the stuff they have in the works. And that's Friends of Long Beach Animals. I mean, you can go on – they have a great website there. You can go on there and donate, even if it's $5, man. It's like every little thing goes right into – doing work for what they do, which is an incredible cause. I mean, I envy, you know, I don't envy their task. You know, it's a lot of work that those people do, but it's obviously, it's a labor of love for them. And, you know, even when I go to the shelter out here and just look at dogs and, you know, bring treats and stuff like that, it's like these people, it's a great job. And you get to hang out with these awesome dogs all day, but it's, you know, there's a lot of despair, man. It's like, you see these dogs sitting there and nobody's adopting them. And, you know, like you could say, you know, look at your dog and you could think, what a great dog. Like, why would anybody do this to this dog? Or why would anybody turn this dog in? You know, like, we're looking at my dogs and you're like, what's wrong with this guy? Like, what did you see wrong with this guy that you physically brought him to the pound and said, I don't want him anymore? It's like, it freaks me out, because I don't think I've met one person that's got a rescue that isn't thoroughly in love with this dog, and every, you know, and they have great personalities and they're loving dogs and they're, you know, full of energy. And it's a strange thing, right? I mean, that whole adoption thing. And that, what's great is that, you know, a lot of the states now in Long Beach, actually, and I talked to Josh Henkin in Phoenix, I believe, you're no longer allowed to sell purebreds in pet stores, which awesome. Is big. I mean, you know, you see that in the, I don't know if you still see that, but we still have
them in the malls here, man.
Yeah, the malls, right? You get there and everybody's looking and they're, you know, they're essentially puppy mill dogs, and we don't know where they came from, or they travel across the country in the back of a semi, and they're, you know, they got all these issues and health issues and stuff. So they're having it so that if they do have animals in there, they are actual adoption animals, like you would see at a PetSmart and places like that on the weekend. So that's huge. I mean, once we get over that hump of getting people to understand that there's not this prestige or, you know, sexiness to getting this purebred dog that's going to cost you thousands of dollars, you know, once we get over that, I think that's going to be a huge part of the solving the problem. You know, there's just so many great animals out there to adopt.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I got Marty through Pets Finder, and just, there's, you know, so many dogs. If you want to, you know, find a dog in your area, like find the nearest, you know, no kill shelter and support them. And I'll be frank, he's getting the better end of the deal. He's sleeping on a Tempur-Pedic mattress right now. But at the same time, like, he is something that he not only hangs out with me when I'm doing work at home, but he sits there and waits for me to walk him. So he makes sure I get activity, you know, for at least an hour a day. Like, he knows he's going to get those 2 half-an-hour walks. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he's not going to let me get anything done. So it's a good symbiotic relationship. So just a great organization and just thing to support in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about what you're also doing out in Long Beach. And you did a whole lecture on simplifying program design, because this is something that really fascinates me these days. Is there's like two completely opposite ends of the spectrum. Like, I feel maybe even 5 or 10 years ago, it was all about just making crap more and more complicated when it came to program design, and people really losing what the end goal was in terms of just getting too caught up in how complicated and how fancy they're trying to make their programming. And I'm really interested to see how was like the response from your talk in Long Beach. Do you think people were receptive to it?
Yeah, I did this talk up at the University of Washington for the Hammer Strength Clinics. I've done that, obviously in the one days and stuff. I've had great feedback. Sometimes I feel like when you simplify something, sometimes people think it's not as valuable anymore. Like, oh, it's not as crazy or in depth or complicated as I thought. So maybe it's not something maybe this isn't the talk for me, or maybe this, it doesn't make sense. It's just too easy, And I think the reality is, and obviously you were around Boyle, and I've been influenced by Mike and Cosgrove and all these people. I mean, I think it's like I say, it's a science, but it's not rocket science. But when we try to make things sexy or give them funky names or try to break up movement patterns in a really weird way that maybe isn't quite, you're not familiar with, people kind of tend to go to that and go, oh, what's going on over there? Like, why is that guy doing that? That's kind of cool what they're doing, When in reality, you're looking at it and they're going back to like an upper lower split or something, or something like a body part deal that's kind of like modified to look like a full body. Or I think the feedback was really good, and I think it really helps a lot of young trainers to kind of figure out how to create that template and create an easy system. I think it's probably the more experienced trainers that maybe are like, well, I already got my stuff and I kind of already do this. But I always say I'll put it up against anybody's stuff, you talk about research and that, I'll say my lab is, 350 kids a day for 20 years, and this is what we do. And we see the results and we see us changing bodies and we see us, building fitness and work capacity and getting stronger and more powerful. So I with limited resources and with limited time and with, limited training sessions. So, we know it works and we're pretty confident. I'm pretty confident about that. So, the people that'll listen, I think really, really, get something to take home and really get something that's valuable to take home and start to implement with their clientele.
So putting like athletes aside for a second, and I know a lot of people who listen to the FitCast are just people who like to get after it and they like to, mess around with their own programming and things like that, just to get to that goal of, looking good naked, or maybe, getting that 400-pound deadlift or whatever their goal is. For people that aren't really necessarily in like that athlete setting in terms of program design, are there any, common things that you think people could be doing better when it comes to designing their own programs, or for personal trainers out there, designing more efficient programs for their clients?
Yeah, I think, we went through that phase. It's like this, and we've talked about this. I don't know how many times I've been on this. Maybe this might be like fourth time, maybe, or fifth time I've been on your podcast. But I think along the way, we talked about this a couple of times about how this industry in general tends to swing from one end to the other, right? From like everything on a BOSU ball to BOSU balls suck. From, like you should be doing this kind of, unstable single limb stuff to bullshit, we should just be doing heavy deadlifts and squats. So like whereas there's a whole world in the middle, right? There's a whole world where we can kind of get a lot of things. And when we started kind of the interval stuff and that stuff became really big and cardio strength training and all that kind of stuff, it seemed like it went to a lot of training when you'd go to even to classes or small group classes. A lot of it looked like what you would see in boot camp classes. So you'd see just body weight drills, through the roof and burpees and, you know, split jumps and squat jumps and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it was, you know, a lot of stuff, maybe using sound timed intervals and things like that. So I started seeing, or for just from what I was observing, was just a lot of basically a lack of strength training. So now kind of creeping over to the other end of the spectrum again, and instead of saying, hey, strength training is important, how can we incorporate that into our metabolic stuff, like via like density training or heavier circuits? It was kind of going away from that, and everything was just higher volume, lower load stuff. So I think in general, I think for trainers, my main thing would be like to find kind of that balance in your training sessions where you might have an emphasis one time on more of that metabolic, you know, 30-30 kind of stuff with TRX rows and push-ups and squat jumps and, you know, kettlebell swings for time. And then another, you know, another session focus more on like a full body template that we would normally use, or like a density kind of template where you are, you know, squatting and hinging and pushing and pulling, but with load now and really starting to load and really starting to track loads and things like that, because strength's obviously a pretty important factor, and even power, and like having explosive exercise in there where we're actually trying to work on our explosive ability, you know? So I think that's the kind of, that's probably the end. If I'm talking to trainers now and seeing what they're doing is kind of making sure that they're doing that, obviously within the programming itself, making sure you are doing all those essential movements, which most people don't. Even to this day in 2015, most people don't. You know, you can look at people's programs and I can't tell you how many times people go, Dose, I love your stuff. I read power training and, you know, cardio strength training. And, you know, this is what I'm doing with my clients. And you look at what they're doing and you're like, I don't know what that is. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's almost like a disconnect in people's minds. They think they can read something or look at something and then just put their own spin on it. But their spin on it's like completely 180 from, you know, what I was doing. All of a sudden they're looking at it and you're like, you have an arm day and you have a upper day. And, you know, like, so it's, I don't know. I can't tell you how many times that's happened over the years with me where I'm just kind of waiting for them to say, oh, I'm just kidding, you know, but they're not, they're actually, they think they're doing the stuff, but they're doing something completely different. I think it's kind of a natural thing for people who want to put their own spin on stuff, but it's one thing to pick a different exercise in a movement category that you like more versus just changing that movement category and not doing it, or doing this one twice, or doing this one, you know, four times or something. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we are in terms of just kind of the education process. I think one of the things I talked about with Will Fleming on our last podcast, on that performance podcast, was, you know, my observations from Perform Better, where a lot of trainers just didn't seem that interested in learning how to train. It seemed like a lot of the people were there kind of more enamored with the sports med aspect or the PT aspect, right, of this field. And I think that's a dangerous tightrope we're walking, mm-hmm, you know, as trainers, is overstepping our bounds. I kind of say it just like, I think about the concept of just staying in your lane. It's okay to look outside and look at the other lanes, but that's why we refer out, right? I mean, that's why you refer out to a PT or something if there's an injury issue. Like in ours, we have a chain of command, right? So we have an ortho, and we have PTs, and we have athletic trainers. I don't even get them, you know, till that chain of command feels that they're ready to come back. And a lot of times it's with modifications. So, but in the real world, you might have a client that just came off an injury or something, and their general doc practitioner says, oh yeah, you know, you're good, but you're unsure. That's when you refer out. And if you're unsure, you know, none of us really should be putting hands on people, you know, and that's the thing. I think a lot of times now people watch Gray do something or Stu do something, or, and they think, well, I could do that. But no, you can't do that. You know, that's not our lane, and it's okay to refer out. I think that's the professional thing for us to do, is to know when it's in our lane and know when it's not in our lane. The same way I would hope that they would, the PT would, when it's time to create a training program, you know, refer or defer to one of us, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm curious what your thoughts are, because we do have all of these physical therapists that are speaking at these events now.
I think it's heavier. I think yeah, the PT sports med part or dimension of the summits now is probably the majority now, I would think.
Well, do you think it's like a case of, I've talked with a couple of guests in the past about this, but the idea of we figured out program design for the most part. Like, you can look at your stuff, you can look at Alan's stuff, you can look at Mike's stuff, you can look at Eric Cressy's stuff, and you can have like a pretty good idea of the similarities between, you know, the things that we agree on, and we have a pretty good idea of where program design is. And then maybe people are just figuring, all right, well, I got that covered. Now I'm just going to see what else is out there, whether it be nutrition stuff or whether it be the rehab side of things. You just kind of think that's where things are going?
I think so. I think it's kind of like, it might be a little like personal trainer ADD.
Right.
But it's, I think it's fun. I think that's kind of a funny mindset too, though, because, you know, it's my 27th year training, and I don't necessarily think I got it down. I mean, I might change some stuff, you know, next year I might add something or do something different. So I don't, it's one of the, maybe that's the point. Maybe that the whole thing is perhaps we downplay training when in essence training is what we do, we're supposed to be doing. And that's our primary job. That's our gig. And I think once we get away from that, you know, I think there's a lot that goes in that. And you can look at it by the attendance in the rooms at the summit and the names of the talks. Right. So like, you know, if Sue 2 years ago talks about the shoulder and you can't get in that room, Sue last year talks about yoga and people are like, yeah, that's not for me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to her talk, all she did was basically apply yoga to a lot of the movements that we do now in our training programs and a lot of the FMS screening movements and things like that. So it was actually a really good talk, but because of the title, that yoga, you know, in the title, perhaps that people are like, I don't do yoga with my clients kind of thing. Instead of thinking, well, maybe there's something I can learn here. Or maybe you walk away going, yeah, I really do hate yoga still, you know, like, you know, whatever the case would be. So, it might be that people, like you said, think they know what the programming, but I'll be honest with you, from the stuff that I see, I don't see it. You know, I see people maybe being a little ignorant to that, to think that they have it down when their stuff's not really, really not any good. So from, you know, I think if we walked into any, you dropped into any city and you randomly picked out five gyms and you did that over there where you are, and I did it over here where I am, and somebody did it in Texas and somebody did it in Washington, I think we'd find some really horrible stuff.
Absolutely.
You know, and then you start to wonder, how do we, like, where's the message coming from? Is there any place that people, you know, are going to in general, or, you know, you might have one gym that's completely influenced, you know, by Exos or something. They might do really cool, really, you know, sound stuff, or that wouldn't be the norm though. You know what I mean? That would be kind of like, well, it's just one of those things where, or something, somebody that's, you know, a gym that's in Alan or Rachel's coaching group, they're going to be doing really, really similar stuff to them. So we know that's going to be a pretty good, pretty sound programming and pretty sound training. But for the most part, you know, if I walk into Gold's Gym out here, it's, you know, my eyes are going to be burning by the time I leave that place. So, there's still a lot to be said there and a lot to be done. I think the work is just beginning in that respect. And I think because of that, you know, I think the PT stuff and a lot of the stuff that we see is cool. It's very educational. But at the end of the day, when I look in the room and I see, you know, people that are just starting to train, it worries me. Like, what are you going to do Monday with your client? Mm-hmm. You know, are you going to go out there and start, you know, trying to manipulate this and doing this with them? I mean, to me, that's kind of like the dangerous thing. I think that could be that, you know, that they always say, like, a little bit of knowledge is probably the most dangerous thing you can have about anything, right?
Yeah, and I haven't really thought about this, but I can really correlate what you're saying just from being at all three summits this year and seeing where people are checking stuff out. It's the hands-on are a lot more packed, so they want to be able to, you know, try this stuff out, whether it be going to see Gray suffer. Like, if you looked at in Sue's room for her hands-on, it was jam-packed, where her practical, you know, was half full. And I don't know, maybe this is the best way I can put it, but it's scary when you can have someone who can go to like an art class for one day, who can kind of pick out some of the things and like a famous piece of art, but that doesn't really give them the right to start trying to be Picasso or something like that.
Exactly.
That's an interesting trend that we need to keep an eye on. It's,
well, and I don't know if I posted something on Facebook yesterday, and it was, I was just, you know, going through YouTube videos, right? And you saw that comment about, I don't know why anybody would get a personal trainer. There's so many resources out there. You can figure it out yourself. Like, that just baffles me, right? And that's obviously a non-trainer who's saying I could do it as good as a trainer, or maybe doesn't understand the difference between a trainer, a qualified trainer, an experienced trainer, or just a good trainer, right? I mean, that stuff drives me nuts because it obviously just cheapens and devalues what we do, what we've chosen to do in our lives, you know, what we've gone to school for, what we've learned for, what we've interned for, what we've shadowed for. It's just, it blows me away, you know. It's like, yeah, my wisdom teeth are kind of bugging me. I think I'm just going to go at it today. I'm going to go YouTube that and take that, you know. Nobody would do that, you know, but I'm going to create a program to try to lose, you know, 100 pounds, you know, and I've never done anything. I have no experience doing anything. I'm just going to go on YouTube and try to learn it. It's just, I don't know, it's bothersome. I don't think it's going to go away because of all the nut jobs that we have out there as well. We've got a lot of bad stuff going out there. So I think sometimes it's warranted. You know, people, I would be skeptical as well, you know, looking at the field and seeing what's going on out there.
Yeah, and I think that we don't have to go all talking about the industry stuff, but this is again, intriguing to me, where I think a lot of coaches and trainers today, and I even talked to, God, who did I just have on the show? Oh my God, I'm completely blanking out who I talked to. Okay, I had Nick Winkleman on the show, and I was talking to him about how I feel like there's just like a lot of stuff that's going on with coaches in terms of just like teaching them how to be enthusiastic, or like there's, you know, things like, I think going and seeing Martin Rooney's talk is super, super important for coaches and trainers out there, because you need to make sure that you have a really good mindset when you go into coach people and things like that. I'm worried, you know, at times that maybe we could be going too far even in that direction and thinking, you know, some of the coaching isn't so much important. It's just more important about, you know, being super enthusiastic and super pumped. And, you know, let me preface and say that the stuff that Martin's doing with Training for Warriors is fantastic. I've had him on the show a bunch of times. I think it's super, super important. But you can't just put all your eggs in one basket. You got to make sure you're really well-rounded coach. And maybe that's kind of like what you're talking about, what you're seeing.
Yeah,
these events.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good point, Kevin. I that's a good point. I think that's important stuff. I get amped every time I listen to Martin talk.
Absolutely.
But, you know, maybe that overshadows his coaching, his actual programming and stuff, you know. And I think maybe some people will be like, you know what, I'm a great motivator. People tell me I'm really a fun and enthusiastic guy. I'm going to be a, you know, train, you know, and the training becomes secondary to that, you know. And I think it's great. You need to have a combination of two. It's the same thing I say, like, you can have your degree and you can have your advanced degree and your CSCS and all these USAWs and your FMS and all this stuff, but not be able to convey that message or have any people skills. Mm-hmm. You're going to be a terrible coach, right? You're going to be a terrible trainer.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to have both. It's kind of, that's the science part. And then the art part would be your ability to actually coach somebody, you know. And Boyle's talked about this before, like, you know, that's your value as a coach, is like, can you get in there and get somebody? You have a room and three different athletes and they're all different personalities, but you want them to get to the same end result. You got to go about it a different way. And that's kind of why they pay you the big bucks, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. That's the coaching part. And enthusiasm is part of that, of course, but the programming is got to be the bed. You got to have a bedrock of something that you're going to go to. Like, after you get people all amped, what are you going to do with them? Right. Like, what's the training plan? What's your sequence? You know, how are we progressing? How are we regressing? There has to be a plan there. And that's the whole thing. Going back to the very first question is, you know, it's not as hard as people want to make it. But I think a lot of times that's not very sexy and that doesn't really sell, you know? Mm-hmm. So people want to hear like the cool thing or the internet guru talk about, oh, doing this, even though it's never been done on a human being, you know? So, that's kind of the thing we wrestle with, I think, in 2015. I'm sure we'll be wrestling with it for a while, but there'll probably be something else for us to have to deal with as well next year. Is, you know, things are keep changing.
Well, it's like anything. It's like always going to be fighting to find that balance between motivator, you know, programming, rehab, and making sure that you're not going too deep into to one end of things. And it's an unregulated industry. Like, there's nothing we could really do about it, but just kind of hope, you know, people out there are getting educated and they're not getting people hurt, you know, above all else.
Yeah. Well, and I was just reading an article that got forwarded to me about in Washington, D.C., about, you know, them trying to, you know, basically get an established criteria. And
Massachusetts is one of the states that they're looking at first, too.
But what I'm seeing is that the guidelines and the frameworks are being created by physical therapists. And I'm like, wow, see, that's the whole thing about staying in your lane.
Right.
So, like, now what are we is it all going to be rehab, you know, foundation kind of stuff? Is everything going to be real touchy-feely? Is everything going to be real assessment-based? And, you know, are we ever going to lift anything at that point? So that's the thing that worries me a little bit as well.
Okay, so it's not, we got to set up like a super PAC, and we're going to need to get some people down at the Hill to drop some cash into these
lobbies. Yeah.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, we need some lobbyists.
I agree. There should be some kind of. I mean, I don't know if there's an easy answer to that, but there should be some governing, I guess, or some, you know. But it's a tough thing because there's so many different ways to go about it. But there is a right and a wrong. It's just a matter of now getting people to agree what's right and what's wrong. You know, I think that's the big thing. But it would be nice if it wasn't such a wild, wild west out there. If it was a little more reined in, I guess.
We'll see. We'll see. Anything can happen. Let's get into this question from OG Strength and Conditioning, OG Strength on Twitter. Talking about programming for the summer and making sure that that doesn't contradict what you will then be doing when those athletes return in the fall. And there's maybe two ways that you can hit on this, because sometimes, like at MBSC, we get other people's athletes for the summer. Like, we're getting people that are coming back from college or people that are going to be going into college, and they have a program that sometimes the coach just sends along that they email, and that's what they're supposed to be doing. Obviously, we do what we do at MBSC, but I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on dealing with that stuff, or just in general, like how do you have to approach that off season or that summer training differently than what you're going to be doing the rest of the year?
First off, is that OG training, like original gangster?
It's OZ, like. I don't need. That would be way better if you could get
especially with the whole straight out of Compton and all that stuff. You know. I think when I saw that question, I thought, you know, was he talking about like how coaches train a certain way and then have to deal with the season, and so they have to change their plan? Is that how you kind of saw it?
Yeah, let's go at that direction.
Yeah, I this is what I've seen. And this blows my mind to this day. And I see it at Division I schools. I mean, they're not the giant schools, but we have soccer girls and basketball and volleyball girls that go to schools. They'll train all summer and then they won't train at all during the season. It's almost like the coach thinks, well, we already trained. Now we got to play, you know, which is obviously insane to me to even think to even if you're going to give it the token, you know, I'm doing air quotes maintenance on these kids, at least during the season. So that's number one. Like that's obviously a no-no. Don't do that. If you're doing that, it's nuts. It's just kind of like, and it's like, you've done all this basically for nothing, because it's going to be gone. You're not going to be dealing with, maintaining or even getting, everybody gets stronger, you know, and all for most of our, football is the one that's the toughest because they just get beat down the most, but all our sports, they all get stronger and more powerful as the season goes on, just because of our training. But when I think of a fall sport and I think of what we do in the summer, obviously the emphasis, we train really hard. We treat it as a preseason. So we go in and obviously the energy system training and stuff all gets dialed up. We want to come into that season and come into camp in the best shape we are, super strong, super fit, super healthy. For years I used a linear periodization scheme. So we would just try to really just maintain and just hammer them and stay up in that 85, 90, 95% of all their lifts. And we would do it all season long. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I made that shift back in like 2004 to this alternating linear, every 3 weeks we keep changing our cycle. So it, for us, we don't do anything different in the season than we did in the summer. So the only difference in the summer, we have an 8 week block. So we, every 2 weeks we shift from a hypertrophy to a strength power phase in our lifts. And then during the season, we'll flip it to every three. So it doesn't matter if we're going into a rivalry game or playoffs or bye week and it's a hypertrophy week, then it's a hypertrophy week. Like we just treat, like we just keep going the whole time. So other than the downtime after the season and we kick back up in the spring, we just keep going. So nothing for us, nothing changes. You know, the emphasis will change. Obviously I don't have as much time with them because they're spending more time with matches and games and practice, but and the conditioning was dialed back because they're doing that during their practices. But I mean, that's kind of the way I would gear things, you know. And as far as lifting goes, we found that this works really, really well for us and injury prevention and maintaining their power and maintaining their strength and even their size. So that's kind of, you know, where that's the angle that I have.
And it's that like that never ending fight with that coach. Do you have, I know like we just had a couple coaches that have gotten spots this year. Do you have any advice for that, you know, collegiate strength and conditioning coach that needs to convince the head coach of the team that, hey, maybe you should let me do my goddamn job?
Yeah, that's the $1 million question. It just depends on, you know, the environment that they're going into, the support that they have from athletic director up, in terms of that, because most people are going to defer to the coach, right? Even most ADs are going to just say, well, if the coach doesn't want to do it, then don't do it. Or, you know, we have schools out here, Division I schools, where the coach will go, well, the basketball guy has his own guy he wants to bring in, so he's going to do it. You know, that's insane to me. That blows my mind. But it's just, you know, you hate to say it, but the only way to prove the point is for things to go bad, you right. know, right. And for the athletic training staff to be like, hey, you know, we got to be doing something, you know, to get in their ear in a different angle, you know, for injury prevention's sake, we got to be doing something. We got to be going twice a week with these girls or these guys, you know, whatever that the situation is. But it's in 2015, it's still common. It's probably not as common as it was 5-10 years ago, but it still is. I mean, it's still out there. I still have girls and guys that go to different schools that come back and say, we don't do anything at all. You know, we don't even have a weight room, or we don't have a strength coach and an assistant coach does it. And he doesn't know what he's doing. Or, and then they'll do, you know, token stuff all off season and then in season, nothing. So, it's, you know, that's what it is. And, but like for the kids getting these positions and going in, it's gotta be about that sell. Like what's the value of what we do? And the value is year round. The value has to be during the season is critical. We really have to be, you know, getting after it. And that has to be considered part of their practice. You know, the teams that have the most success on our campus are the coaches that treat what I do as a vital part of their practices. And if you're late to my part of the practice, then you're going to get punished in your part, in their part of the practice, or before their practice or after their practice. Or sometimes you're not even going to get the practice if you miss the lift. That's, it has to be part of the, you know, a key component there in that puzzle. So, it doesn't, even on my campus, which is much smaller, we have coaches that won't, you know, buy in to that necessarily. So, but for us, we're got a little more power, and then I could say, okay, well, I'm just not training your guys at all, you know, so you can bring in your own guy or something to do what you want. But most of the time they just don't do anything because it's not important to them, you know?
Yeah. What's the, man, we got to get a little more positive about this. It's like, yeah, just do whatever we can. We just, you're just fighting the power, fighting the man. But let's get back into the subject of program design, because when it comes to just putting together these programs, how far out are you usually planning for, you know, whether it be an athlete or whether it be an adult? Is there like a certain set, like you like to do, you know, 12 weeks of programming ahead of time? Do you like to kind of adjust after every 3 or 4 weeks? How do you like to set it up personally?
Yeah, I like to adjust probably more regularly. Most people. So that might even be week to week sometimes, depending on what our group looks like. We might change the plans, you know, so we're okay with that. I'm okay with you know, taking a workout off. And I think sometimes that's the best thing we can do. So, but we, you know, we cycle through a lot of exercises. I'm sure you guys do too. We try to find the ones that, you know, our kids will attack. So for some of our teams that, you know, that may attack this exercise a little more, we're going to put that in a little bit more, or, you know, the ones that are going to get after a little bit more when we do density style, you know, circuits, probably going to do that a little more with them. Like,
is that more like competition based stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Like what, like I think of my, like, women's soccer, we're a super, super successful women's soccer team. And the soccer animal in general is a different animal. Right, so it's an animal that's like really fitness, right? Like their coaches, especially our coaches, they're really into fitness. So for them, it's harder for me to get them to attack a full body, you know, this tricep followed by this tricep followed by this tricep, real methodical stuff. I get more out of them if I say, we're going to do this hinge pattern, this explosive pattern, this push pattern, this pull pattern, this core pattern. We're going to perform it like a circuit, more like a density. We're going to try to get a heavy set in, and we're going to try to average a set a minute. And they get, I mean, they end up doing more loads than they would have if I was just doing front squats for, you know, three sets of five paired with chin-ups paired with a mobility drill. I end up getting more out of that because they go at it harder and they give more effort. So
got to trick them, right?
Exactly the whole thing. And, you know, I'm still getting the end result. I'm still getting them stronger and still getting them more powerful and still, you know, bulletproofing them and all that kind of good stuff. But it's a different way. Now, my volleyball girls, I don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. They get after it and they put weight on the bar. And when it's time to go, they go. So that goes back to obviously the coaching part as well. And the kind of knowing the creature that you're dealing with. But in general, you know, we adjust on the fly a little bit. It's far from a whiteboard workout, but we have the template set. So we know what we have, and we know the periodization scheme that we're on and what week we're on. So we know what the emphasis should be. So if I decide to do a density type deal, it might be a 5 rep density deal with heavier loads. If we're in a hypertrophy phase, it would be an 8 rep density deal with a heavy, with moderate loads, you know, or relatively lighter loads. So, we still try to stick to the plan of what we're doing. We're obviously trying to be real sound every time and making sure we're plugging in all our essential movements. And we change the exercises quite a bit. You know, we do it a lot. I mean, there's certain exercises we really try to bang and get them in there regularly, like front squats and things like that, because we think they're, you know, they're pretty valuable. But the Olympic lifts will change constantly. The variations will change. Everything will basically change, you know, except for pull-ups or pull-ups. So vertical pulls are the only thing that we really don't have a lot of leeway to change those exercises. But when it's time to vertical pull, you know, we just plug in whatever. All we have is pull-ups, chin-ups. So.
Here's a $100 idea. It's not a $1 million idea, but it might be $100. I want the manual that tells me, like, team up with like a psychologist and figure out the program that I should write for, like you were saying, for that soccer player versus that volleyball player versus the football player versus the hockey player versus the basketball player. Because, like, we see it at NBSC all the time. Like, it is like five different people from five different planets. When you like give them an exercise, they all approach it completely differently. They all have different, like, some of them complain about like doing certain lifts just because, you know, some of them are a little bit more lower body dominant, some are a little upper body dominant, just prefer height and size of the general sport in general. So besides like soccer, are there any other sports where you're like, yeah, like I just got to treat these guys differently?
Yeah. I mean, people have said before, I've heard coaches talk way back in the day about like, oh, my guys versus my girls. Mm-hmm. It's not like that, right? It's like my girls have like three subsets. Right. And, yeah. And it can usually be dictated by the length of their shorts when they come in the weight room.
Yeah.
So I say my basketball girls, shorts are past the knees, right? Mm-hmm. Got a whole different swagger to them. My soccer girls are kind of in the middle. They're always bouncing around everywhere because they're just totally fitness based. And my volleyball girls have the little tiny spandex on, and they want to lift weights and they want to do explosive jumping drills and stuff. So in that girl category, I got three different animals right there. And then my softball girls, that's a whole different deal too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, that's kind of the thing. And yeah, that would be the $1 million deal. Actually, if you could figure out the kind of the magic cue or the magic deal, like what would they attack the hardest? That would be awesome. Like I was up at Nike a couple weeks ago and with these NTC trainers, which are a group exercise. So it's a whole different animal than I'm used to. But we're talking about trying to like create, have them be able to create more sound programming when they have no equipment and 1,000 people in a field, right? Oh, like awesome. what types of things. And one of the trainers who was actually a former Division I basketball athlete, she also played in the WNBA. She said, you know, I don't think most people understand like hard work, like really working hard. What can we do to get people to work harder? And I'm like, well, if I knew that, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. I'd be sitting back making millions of dollars from my little secret password that I would give everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's the thing. Like that's the, what button do I push on this kid or this sport, you know, to address that need and to get him to attack it hard, you know, every day. And every day it's a struggle. These are days, you know, you get them coming off a win, it's easy to get them going in that next workout. Coming off a overtime loss or losing, you know, in a brutal, you know, long set game in volleyball and against a team that's a rival, good luck, man.
Well, you're that's like where that like Martin Rooney, you know, stuff comes in, like that motivator stuff or that, you know, Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights stuff. You gotta bring that stuff up.
Absolutely. And that's kind of where the little nuances come, right? That's where that becomes golden now. You know, your ability to, even as a coach, man, you got to stay, like for me, I'll piss sometimes, you know, and we invest all this time and energy and we miss out on a championship by, you know, extra innings or something. Man, I mean, I'm as devastated as they are, brutal, you know, but that's the thing. What do you do? How do you respond with the group and do you try to rally them and get ready for playoffs? And, you know, there's so much that goes into it, right? There's so much that goes into coaching in general, especially when you're talking about like coaching teams and things like that.
Man, we're solving the industry's problems right here on the show. We just need someone to actually like sit down and type it up now.
Just getting pissed off. You're just like, no matter how shitty it is.
God, I'm like 30 next year. So I got to start working on my like cranky old, like just complaining about crap all the time.
You got some time to work on that crap. Look.
Jeez.
There's some oldies in this industry that they got it down pretty good though.
One of the things I really regret is that they don't film those Q&As for Better or Worse.
Oh my God.
At the Perform Better Summit, just because
there's been some classics, man.
There's been some good questions. There's been some great responses. There's been some really bad responses from people up on the panel. So,
the recording would be great, but the secret recording. The mumblings and the comments when somebody else is answering the question.
You lean over and be like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that.
Exactly. That's the stuff that's gold, man.
Well, and I'm laughing because like I'm like standing there in the back and I can see like, you know, someone at one end answering the question with a microphone and then like people just like turning their head and be like, Jesus Christ, God.
Did he just say that? Is he telling this person that? Like,
is he 7 years old? Yep. Let's start, you know, coming to the finish line here. We hit on a ton of great stuff, but I've been able to really check out the new product that you're putting together, just all about program design. And it is, we have to reiterate this stuff. Like, this is stuff that you need to be considerate about. You need to put in the work to understand what a good program is, an effective program, and a program that, you know, someone is going to be able to follow efficiently. So what was your mindset going into, you know, working on this, and how did everything come out?
It you know, like power training was like 2006, I believe.
Oh my God.
2006. Yeah. It's crazy. Right. And obviously, you know, it's kind of amazing that it's really kind of upheld. When I look back at it and, you know, obviously, some of the things have changed as far as tools for sure. You know, we've added a lot of arsenal, you know, to our toolbox for sure with different things like Ultimate Sandbags and TRX, even more, much more kettlebell work. So that kind of stuff gets plugged in. But, you know, we've kind of reshaped and renamed a couple of the movement categories, but from the concept of the alternating linear periodization and the way we plug and play is really stayed the same. We've gone to a lot more with our teams, a lot more of these full body sessions. Football is the one on campus that we get four sessions a week with them. So that's the only one we really use that whole push-pull sequence. But so what I did was like, okay, it's more like I'm updating all the stuff that we create, you know, put out in that book. And then I said, how about putting together like a complete package where we have, you know, each category in a video library of exercises so people can refer back to it. And there's little tidbits and cues on each one. For those that really want to be meticulous and go back and look at the movements and listen to the cues and what I'm talking, you know, the nuances of the exercise. So that was massive. That was like, you know, I don't know, hundreds of exercises on this deal. Then we created the manual to go along with it, which is kind of the ins and outs and the nuts and bolts. We did, we included, you know, kind of like the educational kind of presentation of the whole package, like in a 1 hour kind of PowerPoint kind of lecture thing. And then one of the best parts of the product is the cards. So the workout cards, we created some workout cards years ago, and they were macros based. So we had issues with people, being able to manipulate on their own in it,
right.
Passwords and stuff. And then also, across different platforms. So it didn't work in Mac. And then like, didn't work that well if you use different versions of like an Office Excel sheet. So we created one without it. And it works really, really well, works across all platforms, works on Mac, works on PC. And it's got obviously a much more extensive pull down library for each of the categories. And you can plug in any exercise that you want on your own. You can even tweak with the sets and rep schemes and things like that. Although I probably wouldn't, cause that's kind of like the baby in the deal. So, that's really cool. It's going to enable people to save their workouts, print their workouts, you know, get on that iPad or whatever, your laptop and pop them up there. So that's kind of a huge part of it. Cause it's dummy proof. I don't want to say it's dummy proof. It's almost dummy proof where, you know, you have to click something for that category. If you don't, then it's missing, right? Then you're missing that piece of that workout. So we think it came out really cool. We had the Pixel Mob guys come and shoot all the stuff. So the stuff's like amazing. I'm used to like shooting stuff in my garage, you know, with my GoPro or my iPhone. So these guys are amazing. If you've ever seen any of the stuff they've done with, Lee Taft stuff and, Will Fleming stuff. And then even all the DeFranco stuff and all that, just like creates like watching a movie, you know? So those guys are amazing with what they did. And we shot that over at Will Fleming's gym, in Bloomington. And, yeah, we think it came out really well, and we're going to release that, September 8th. So, we're pumped, man. We're getting tons of people already asking tons of questions about it. And I think it's really user friendly. So it's going to be really easy to understand, like I said, and it's just a more, you know, a tactile kind of, you know, I can grab this thing and I can look at it and I can plug it in and I can use it right now. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of overthinking, and there's not a lot of like really, you know, there's nothing that's confusing to it at all. And even in the manual, I try to make sure we understand why that we have this category and why these exercises are in it and why these are my favorite exercises kind of thing. So I think it's going to go well. I think people are going to really dig it.
Yeah. I've been playing around with it. And I think a couple of things that people are really going to like is like lynda.com, which is like one of the best educational platforms for anything that you want to learn. You guys are really similar to that in terms of just like saying like, you know, here's a bunch of stuff. You don't have to get overwhelmed with it. Like, this is where you should start. This is where you should go. You put in, like you said, like the workout cards and stuff like that, which like kind of alone, I hate Excel. In like doing all that stuff, like having just all that stuff done ahead of time is gigantic for someone that needs to write a lot of programs. Like it can completely change the way that your like workflow goes. But it's super cool stuff. And we need more stuff like that out in the industry to make sure that people are putting together great programs that are going to get people results. And it can also make the lives of the coaches and the trainers easier. You shouldn't spend 4 hours writing two programs every night. Like that makes no sense.
Yeah. That always baffles me when people say that I'm up all night writing programs. I'm like, what are you doing?
But exactly. You gotta,
what could you possibly be doing? You know, if you're thinking about, because I think sometimes people think that way when they write a program is they think I'm going to come at this one for a whole new angle. Whereas, you know, there is something that's right there in front of you. And we know that this template system is going to work. We know it's sound, and we know it addresses all the needs of that workout. So just go with it, man. Just don't fight it so much and just go with it. And now work on that coaching part, you know, work on that motivational part. Now work on all that good stuff. So, and then just kind of see how it goes. And now it's a matter of dialing in loads and things like that. But it's almost like you just want to give somebody the tools, you know, now here we go. Let's go. Let's see what you can do with it. Cause it's pretty, like I said, it's plug and play for a reason, man. It's pretty simple.
And I'll have links for that in the show notes, and you know I'll be up front. It's going to be an affiliate link, so if you know you want to check it out, I highly recommend. I've been poking around with it a lot. I actually want to share it with some of the guys at MBSC to kind of show them in terms of what we're doing with our program design, some things that we could really clean up. Mm-hmm. But I'll throw a link for it in the show notes if you want to help support the show. But for everyone who's like, screw Kevin, I just want to go and buy it, where can they go pick it up? What's the best link for it?
I believe CompleteProgramDesign.com will be the platform where we're going to be right now. It's got like the promo video, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. And I think right now it just says coming soon. So nothing will pop up on there until the release on September 8th. But that's another thing that's kind of baffled me. Let's talk about the affiliate concept for a second. Like, why would somebody pay the same amount? Is it just because you're going to get some of the money? Is that you think that's why people get turned off sometimes?
Oh, absolutely. I think, I'm always upfront about it because I think these days people sometimes get bombarded with, when something new comes up, you know, they get bombarded with links from everyone because we want to support our friends. And trust me, if you've listened to this show, you know I turned down lots of people that I will not have on this show because I don't believe in their stuff, or I won't support their product when the product comes out because I don't believe in their stuff. So when I do promote something or I do tell people something that's out there, you know it has my full backing. Otherwise,
yeah, that's how I am. I mean, I can count on my hands, both hands, over all the years that I've ever sent out email blasts, how many I've actually done. You know, and it's like maybe some Cosgrove stuff, some Boyle stuff. I mean, Lee Taft stuff. I mean, honestly, like, and I don't want to be that guy. So it bothers me when people would think, and people have done that. Oh, I'm subscribing because you're trying to sell too many things. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, my inbox is completely pounded most of the time by stuff. And then when something cool comes out, you know, you're going to see it. And I think maybe that bothers people too. Like, oh, everybody's jocking, trying to get a piece of that action. But I mean, come on, you're supporting something that you believe in, you're supporting somebody you like their stuff for this. If somebody giving back to you and clicking on your link and having it go to you and your Fitcast, which is obviously something that's a resource that people take for granted. I think, I don't think people understand that podcasts actually take time to do. And,
podcast, it's not like you just like,
and just getting the time to schedule, to talk to people and stuff. I mean, that's, you know, we all work. So it's not like we're sitting here going, yeah, I'm just this self-made guy and I got all this cash. I'm just going to sit here and do this for fun. Right. Like, it is for fun, but at the same time, it's work. It is work. It's not like if you weren't doing this right now, you'd be doing something else. You'd be doing emails or you'd be doing work stuff. Or it's not like you're just like, oh, I'm not going to watch my DVR of Real Housewives now. You know, like, there's something going on. So it is funny. I kind of get it. You know, like, while people are like, oh, this guy he's just promoting this link because he's going to get money for this or whatever. But I don't know. It's 2015. Don't we understand that that's kind of how things work now? You know, like,
well, I'm up front, even if it's like, you know, if there's a book on Amazon that I recommend, they kick back like whatever it is, 2%. And if I sell 10 books, I might get like $2. And it does add up, though.
Yes. Be careful. You almost had a Starbucks right there.
I know. It's not, you know, as glamorous as it sounds, but, like I said, if you do want to do two great things, you can pick up the program. You can also help support the Fitcast. You can do it all through that one link. And of course, if you're following me on Twitter, I'll be tweeting out links about it as well. And if you want to make it even doubly easier that you don't miss out on out on this, you can go to at Robert Dose. That's Coach Dose's Twitter account as well, which you should be following, because we also need to talk about the performance podcast, because I think we may have like briefly talked about that the last time you were on, but you guys are back into the flow of things. You guys have been cranking out a bunch of shows. So you know, for people that are like, yeah, I have more time, I want to listen to some more podcasts, which I do recommend you guys do. What's the show like? Like, what can people expect?
Just me and Will just talking shit. We try to keep it pretty objective, but it, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's like anything, you know, sometimes you just go, hey, we talked about that. The last one we did talk about kind of observations by what people were doing and where people were going and perform better and kind of what we thought, you know, that was going to happen, the future of the industry. But we talk about some, you know, what we think is going to be relevant. They're pretty short and concise. They're usually in that 30, 40 minute range. And for Will and I, it's just a matter of us being able to find that block of time and bang one out or bang two out at one time. So Will just had a great, you know, an amazing Olympic weightlifting book that he just released. And so we talked about that in one of them and just kind of like the comp, you know, like weightlifting in general for general pop and problems that we see and issues that people have and questions people have. So it's pretty cool. And, we have a Twitter at Performance Podcast. And on Facebook as well, a Performance Podcast. So you can kind of see that, you know, find it there and download on iTunes. And hopefully we're going to be more consistent, you know, at this point.
Well, it's not easy to do this stuff. It's not easy to set aside the time to record, to align schedules, to edit, to post, do RSS feeds, all that fun stuff that goes mm-hmm. on in the background. But let's definitely give Will a shout out too. It's Complete Olympic Lifting Handbook, and you can pick it up on Amazon. It's $10 for the Kindle version or $25 for the paperback. He's on my list of people I got to get on the show. His stuff is awesome. So,
yeah, and he's great to have on the show because he's just such a great guy and just really knowledgeable about a lot of stuff. And he's really got a successful business, and you know, he's walking the walk. And I think that's nowadays that's becoming maybe a little more rare than
absolutely.
It should.
Absolutely.
But it's a great book, man. It really is. If you have the one resource, if you want that one on your bookshelf, this is the one. It's like, you know, you can come in there, whether you be a newbie or an advanced guy looking, you're going to pick something up for sure, even as an advanced person. And he's a great coach, you know, so it's going
to
be great.
No, I'm going to forward it to Mike too. I don't know if Mike got a copy, but, you know, this is something that I swear to God, like every one of our staff meetings, we end up talking about Olympic lifting because it is the most coaching intensive thing that we do. And if we can pick up some tips, it's going to be gigantic. So, and it's, God, 2 weeks until our fall program starts up and our staff meetings go back into full effect. So, I'll shoot a copy over to Mike too, to make sure we get him on that. So yeah, that's going to wrap it up for this show. I do like to always take a second to just say thank you to everyone that, you know, if you are supporting the show through Patreon at patreon.com/thefitcast. It means so much. You know, we've had some people drop off in the last couple of weeks. I totally understand that, especially if you're doing summer traveling, expenses pop up. But literally, like, if you can do $1 per episode, 4 episodes per month, $4 per month, it's whatever it is, $48 per year. It does mean a lot. It adds up when a bunch of people get on there. And it's, I got to do some fun calculations, which is kind of depressing. I think we have like, it was 0.2% of the audience supports the show through Patreon, which is totally cool. Like, I mean, I totally, it's a big boundary to actually just like even take the time to go on the site to do that stuff. So I understand how all that stuff works, but, it does mean a lot if you jump on there and support the show. It takes a couple minutes to set up, and thank you everyone out there that is doing that. We have some, you know, amazing supporters. So, thank you. It is what allows me to squeeze in that extra 4 hours, 5 hours a week to record, edit, and post this stuff to make sure that new shows show up on your phone magically every single week. But Dose, anything else that people should keep an eye out for? Any talks coming up? Or obviously, like I said, you can make sure that you're following Dose on Twitter, and I'll make sure to throw that stuff in the show notes as well.
Yeah. And then my site, CoachDose.com. I'm the worst blogger in the world. But once it's again, like, it's like, went like, oh, I'm like, oh, I got some time. Maybe I should do a blog. Like, it's just, there's just so much going on right now, you know, with everything that we got going on. And, mm-hmm. But everything, you know, obviously I'm going to be doing some lead up posts and stuff for the product as it's coming out in a couple of weeks. So there'll be some good stuff on there for sure. And then Will just did a really good guest blog. On my site, the last blog post that's up there is actually a great weightlifting one. Mm-hmm. I think it was titled "The End of the Ugly Power Clean" or something. So it's pretty cool. Yeah,
very cool. We got lots of stuff to check out, and for everyone else out there, lastly, I'll say if you enjoy the show, jump on iTunes, subscribe on there, and if you as I mentioned, enjoy it. I'd love if you put a review on there. Make sure you check out the Performance Podcast as well. Download that, get that on your phone so you can get some more awesome information. We need more information. We need more great coaches doing this stuff. I love to see it. So, Dost, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show, and we will be back in Long Beach in no time, I'm sure. And hopefully I'll actually not be drunk somewhere else. I'll be drunk with you this year.
Hey, and remember, 0.2% of 10 million.
Hey,
thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. Anytime. And thank you everyone out there for listening. We'll catch you next time.